Today's Teisho will be on case 17 in the Book of Serenity, Feyan's Hair's Breadth. Introduction. A pair of solitary wild geese flap on the ground and fly up high. A couple of mandarin ducks stand by the bank of the pond. Leaving aside for a moment the meeting of arrow points, what about when a saw cuts through a scale beam? Case. Feyan asked Zhuishan, "A hair's breadth difference is the distance between heaven and earth. How do you understand?" Zhuishan said, "A hair's breadth difference is the distance between heaven and earth." Feyan said, "How can you get at it that way?" Zhuishan said, "I am just thus. What about you?" Feyan said, "A hair's breadth difference is the distance between heaven and earth." Zhuishan thereupon bowed. Verse. When a fly sits on the scale, it tilts. The balance scale of myriad ages shows up unevenness. Pounds, ounces, drams, and grains, you see them clearly, but after all, it finally reverts and gives up to my 0 point. I want to thank you all for coming here this Saturday to practice the great way, to practice Zen. Everybody was sitting very deeply this morning in the Zendo, and I thank you very much for that effort. Some of us got here very early and recited sutras, some of us started at 8 and some of us came at 9:30. But we'd all been sitting for at least an hour, and you know, when you get up after sitting immobile for an hour or two or even three, when you walk down the hall, it's like wonderful, right? Wonderful. You can stretch your legs. You can feel the muscles loosening up as you walk. If you had an extra cup of tea this morning and you started sitting, maybe you had to go to the bathroom during the sit. You know, you're not supposed to get up during a sit and go to the bathroom, so you just have to sit there. And that requires a great deal of concentration. So, you know, the bell rings, and we all get up, and you go to the bathroom, and you can take a pee. And it's so wonderful to take a pee, right? It's just wonderful. And then, you know, we lined up, and we walked outside to do our kinhin outside. And, you know, if you've been doing meditation a little bit, if you've been practicing for a while, and then you come to sit like this, and you sit for 2, 3, 4, 5 sits, 6 sits, when you walk outside, you know, your mind is like an empty mirror. And everything reflects clearly in that mirror. You might not fully be aware of it, you know, just because you're just mirroring. But probably you enjoyed the experience, you know? And you might not think why, but there's a reason why. The experience of simply walking outside in the sun could be, you know, like heaven. Really like heaven. Just walking down the hall could be like heaven. You know, taking a pee, like heaven. So there's something special going on when we do zazen. You know, something really unusual. And if you come, you know, if you come to the evening sits, we always serve tea at the end of the night, and it's it's really good tea. Either Yen or Yvette bring really first-rate tea from Taiwan, And so it's very good tea. And then we have a date and some tea. But, you know, after sitting for an hour, you know, when you taste that tea, it is good tea, but it's just like heavenly nectar. It's just, people will come up to me and say, what was that tea? You know, they'll write me an email, you've got to give me that tea. What was the brand of that tea? The brand is Zen. It's Zen tea. Because, you know, even though it's good tea, it's not really the tea that makes it so good. It's the zazen that makes it so good. You know, if you brewed up a pot of that tea at home, and you got up in the morning and you turned on NPR, and you're going through your schedule book while you're listening to NPR, and you're sipping that tea, you know, maybe you have an extra cup before you get into the shower, you know. You get out of the shower, you know, getting dressed, you take a slurp. You know, probably has almost no flavor at all, right? It's just, you know, there's a fleeting flavor, right? Just you just taste it, and then on. But when you quiet your body and your mind on the cushion, you know, you really taste that tea. It's like, it's wonderful, wonderful. You know, normally, this is not how, you know, it's a great pity, really, that our culture doesn't teach us to value this experience more fully. Because when we have the experience, people realize this is really special, this is really wonderful. You know, in our culture, there's nothing, in our traditional Western culture, there's nothing like this. You know, there's no mental practice of liberating the mind or clarifying the mind. You know, we value ideas, we do a lot of thinking, but that's not at all the same thing. In fact, you know, that really messes things up. You know, when you sit down on the cushion and you begin to do meditation, you watch the breath, you know, usually there's all kinds of thoughts in there. Last night we had two or three beginners who came. And I asked them, you know, when I asked the beginners, how did it go? And they'll always say, oh my gosh, you know, my mind was so full of thoughts. When people come in to meditate for the first time, they're not aware of that. You know, they actually probably think their minds are very still and quiet. And when you say, sit down on a cushion for half an hour and watch your breath, they can't even get to the breath. People will tell me, I got to the breath once or twice. It's like jumping into a torrent of thoughts and trying to swim upstream. And probably before those people tried it, they would have said, my mind is pretty calm, my mind is pretty empty. But as soon as they sit down on the cushion and try to watch the breath, they realize, you know, the mind is just like churning and churning. So that's our normal condition all day long. That's normal modern Western and now modern world condition all day long. It's not the natural human condition. It's not. You know, there's a historian I like. His name is Carlo Ginzburg. And Ginzburg says that we radically underestimate how different people were in other times and places. He said, when we study the past, we always try to imagine that people in the past were like ourselves. But he said, it isn't true. He said, you haven't really understood the past until you begin to realize how differently people experience the world. When people begin to experience the world in ways that don't make sense, when you're studying the past and you begin to realize these people aren't motivated by our motivations, they aren't thinking our thoughts, you've begun to understand the past. Well, I think people in other times and places haven't lived in the mental world we live in. And we definitely know that Tang Dynasty Chinese people didn't live that way, at least in Zen temples. That their mental processing was really quite different, and ours can be quite different too, if we take the time to practice. You know, the normal modern life is like this torrent of thoughts flowing through your head and triggering all kinds of emotional reactions all day long. So, you know, you get up in the morning and you might be thinking, what do I have for breakfast? And you're so focused on breakfast, you don't hear the birds singing or the wind blowing in the trees. Then as you're eating your breakfast, you don't concentrate on your breakfast. You're concentrating on what you have to do for the day. Maybe you have a big report due, or you have to go to a meeting. You're thinking about what you're going to say. You know, and so, you know, basically you don't taste your breakfast. And you get to the meeting, and of course you don't really want to be at the meeting, so you have to really work hard to focus on what people are saying. And afterwards, you can hardly remember what happened at the meeting, because at the meeting you were thinking about lunch. And then at lunch, you're not thinking about lunch, you're thinking about the next meeting. So, you know, this is a mental style of modern people, very distracted. And people underestimate how deeply this is true. A lot of people do feel it emotionally as like turmoil. At the end of the day, you don't remember all the different mental states you entered, but you may feel like it's been a roller coaster emotionally. You know, because when you're eating your breakfast thinking of the meeting, you're full of anxiety about the meeting. So the anxiety is the mood of your breakfast, right? And when you get to the meeting, it may be some other emotion, you know. And then when you're eating your lunch, you know, maybe you're feeling regret about something you said at the meeting. So there's another power, you know, these powerful emotions are constantly accompanying our thoughts, and our thoughts are triggering these emotional responses uncontrollably. So, you know, when you walk out of your office and the birds are singing and the sky is blue and the breezes are blowing through the trees, you might not even notice. It's very likely you won't even notice. You're in your head, you're replaying events from the day. You're dealing with these emotions that these events trigger in your body. You know, and you get to your car and you drive off and you turn on the radio. And the radio sort of drowns out all this mental processing. So this is the life of an average person in the United States, I think. You know. And I know because, you know, I'm an average person too. I can live this way if I let myself. But, you could think of it this way, you know, the mental world we live in has two screens, so to speak. There's two screens, not one. When you look out of your head through your eyes at the world, you could say that's one screen. But behind your eyes, there's like a little mental theater. There's like a theater in your head, like a movie screen in your head. And when you close your eyes, you can see the movie screen in your head, and the events of the day are playing on the movie screen in your head. And when you open your eyes and you look out, you see the trees and the sky. Well, normally, what's playing on the inner screen is so powerful that it may even drown out what you see when you look through your eyes, right? So you know, the classic example of this is something like this. You know, you have a rough day at work and you go home, and there's your dog who loves you. And you're feeling very fragile, maybe a little agitated. You close the car door and you walk to the house and the dog starts barking, bark, 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 and you just say, shut up. Well, of course, you're not saying shut up to your dog, not really. You're really saying shut up to your boss, you know. And if you could see both of the screens, the dog is in one screen. You see the dog when you look out of your head through your eyes. But on the screen in your head, your boss is still there chewing you out or making you uncomfortable. So, you know, this process of the inner screen, so to speak, is constantly affecting the way we perceive through the, you know, the outer screen. And often we don't even notice what's going on outside because we're so absorbed by what's going on inside. And there's a constant unconscious flow that's coloring our responses to things as we go through the day. This is not a fantasy. This is really like a pretty accurate, I think, understanding of how the ordinary mind works. And so, you know, there's often a very powerful disjunction between what's happening to us and what's going on in our brain, you know, in our mental theater. And sometimes it becomes uncontrollable, right? You know, so some people actually have to get help because they just can't be present. Their anxieties are so great, or and so on, you know. But just ordinary people go through the day this way. This is definitely, I think, so. If you observe your mind for a day, you'll see that this is true. So, you know, meditation, I think, is very special because it says, wait a minute, this is not inevitably how the human being has to live, right? You know, we can learn how to begin to quiet the screen behind our eyes, you know? And at its best, it just goes blank. You know, when that screen really goes blank, when you look out through your eyes, everything around you is fresh and clear. It's just beautifully alive. And at those moments, you know, at those moments, we might say, oh, this is so beautiful. It's like the person who drinks the tea. Oh, this tea is so delicious. And then, you know, goes home, turns on the tube, and so on. So I myself watch television. I'm not saying you shouldn't watch television. But I do think that we can cultivate this kind of direct perception of the screen in front of our eyes in ways that will really free us from, like, these compulsive responses to things, you know. And so, you know, today, if you came to sit, you know, it's like we're cleaning up the screen. You know, if somebody asks you what you're doing on the cushion, I'm cleaning up the screen behind my eyes. You probably shouldn't say that to people. But if you did, and they'd done some zazen, it might make some sense. Because, you know, when you sit down on the cushion, that you're primarily looking at the screen behind your eyes, and it's a torrent of distraction, you know. But you keep coming back to the breath, you keep coming back to the breath, and gradually there's like fewer images on the screen. The images begin to grow, slow down, and then there's like little spaces between your thoughts or between your images and your mind. And then there's these intervals that are just like thoughtless, just a little bit. There's a thought, and then you notice there's like an empty space, and then there's the next thought. And then there's an empty space. And this is progress, really. This is progress. Because if that's as far as you get, that's quite deep. That usually takes many hours of sitting to achieve. So, you know, people get to that place after sitting all for half a day or at sesshin. You know, like on day two or three of sesshin, people can really be in that state. So that state is very precious. It's beginning to decondition ourselves, right? We're beginning to decondition ourselves. If you think about it, our responses to the world are highly conditioned. You know, people spend billions of dollars getting us to respond to the world in programmed ways, right? People want us to have craving. They want us to have anxiety. They want us to have attachments, and they constantly, you know, advertisers say, even if you know the ad is complete BS, it will still work. Isn't that interesting? They call it penetration. All it has to do is get into your head, and even if you know you're being manipulated, it's effective. I think that's fascinating. So, you know, people spend a lot of money to distort your thought processes. But fortunately, you know, we can practice this deconditioning process, and gradually it becomes possible to see things as they are without imposing this other screen on what we're seeing. And usually people experience that as liberation or release. It feels like a weight is off your shoulders, because it is. And usually people feel the aliveness of things very keenly. You know, so it's possible that today when we walked outside, you know, again, if you were on your way to work, you're busy, you know, walking through that little circle of trees might have been not even a memory. You just walk through. You notice it's a little hot. But, you know, if you went through it this morning with an emptier mind, you probably noticed things that you wouldn't have noticed. And usually, when we're in that state, the boundary between ourselves and what we're experiencing really disappears. You know, you become the wind. You know, you become the sound of the wind blowing through the leaves. You know, if you're in a very empty state of mind, that can happen quite easily. And, you know, actually, I personally believe that that is a more healthy mental state than our ordinary distracted state. You know, we know in an intellectual way that the world is really like one thing, one life. You know, if you don't have oxygen, you can't breathe. If you don't have trees, you can't have oxygen. It's like a big system, right? And everything, we're constantly reading that everything is interconnected. We constantly read that all the time. Biologists say it, environmental scientists say it, economists say it, you know. Everybody says it, but we don't usually experience interconnectedness very intensely because our minds are too distracted. But when we cultivate that empty mind, you know, we begin to feel interconnected. The boundary between yourself and the world begins to dissolve. It's really quite beautiful. And if you do a lot of zazen, it happens all the time. Please do a lot of zazen. So, you know, this koan is really talking about this transition, right? How does the koan put it? Feiyan asked Zhuishan, a hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. See? And I think, basically, he's really talking about this transition. You know, two people walk out of the building. One person has an empty mind. And for that person, everything is like heaven. It's like everything is like sacred. Everything is alive and interconnected. The other person doesn't even notice, right? So distracted. Two people walking out of the same building have radically different experiences of the world. And so this is really sort of the hair's breadth. What's the difference? Person A sat down on the cushion for an hour and cleared her mind. And even though the thoughts are still coming, there's fewer. The spaces between the thoughts begin to grow. Sometimes you can really focus your attention on those spaces between your thoughts. And then when you get off your cushion and you walk out of the building, everything is so alive. Now, you know, this can be complicated by certain, you know, factors in our life. So, you know, sometimes it's very hard to give up the mental processing that's going on the theater in our heads. You know, sometimes we have attachments to those things, right? And sometimes we are afraid to look through our eyes. You know, that's also the case. You know, so some people, in fact, most people use sort of like the theater in their heads as a way of coping with the uncontrollability of what's in front of their eyes. Right? So when we feel frightened or when we feel out of control, we retreat into like our mental space. And it's safe in there and it's protective, right? So that can complicate things. Sometimes it's difficult to open your eyes and just be present. People develop habits of not being present. You know, that's very much a strategy people use in the world. Sometimes it's because the world has hurt their feelings or done them some injury. And to some degree, we're all like that. We all have a slightly defensive posture. You know, so we all sort of use our ability to space out or our ability to leave the present moment as a way of coping. But it's actually like a bad strategy because ultimately it impoverishes us, right? It makes the world inaccessible to us. So even if it's painful and difficult sometimes to open your eyes and be 100% present, if you just stick with it, it's liberating. So, you know, in Zen we have something we call koans. And koans are really all about cleaning up the theater in your mind. You know, we have all kinds of habits of not being present. We have all kinds of buried fears and attachments that prevent us from just being 100% present. So these koans are wonderful, wonderful devices for basically reaching back there and freeing us from our obstacles. And this koan is no exception. So, two people walk out of a building. One is in heaven and one is in some other place. Feiyan asked Zhuishuan, a hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. So far, so good. I think that's making a lot of sense. I want to point out something, though, about this issue of, like, the obstacles, you know. It's not always so easy for people to give up the entrancing theater behind their heads, behind their eyes, rather. And, you know, Zazen is really a brilliant strategy. One of the elements of Zazen that is particularly interesting is the physical dimension. And also, there's an element of Zazen which requires people to make a lot of exert yourself a lot. So, a number of people who were here today were at the Sesshin, recent Sesshin 2 weeks ago. And, you know, as you know from coming to Sesshin, the schedule is very demanding. So we wake up at 4:30 in the morning. When I first started doing Zen, that was absolutely unthinkable. I think it was something I had never done in my life. So, you know, I was the kind of person, I guess I had gotten up a little, you know, maybe at 6 or something to get to school in high school. But I liked to sleep till about 8 or 9 even, you know. So getting up at 4:30 was quite a shock, you know. So we get up at 4:30. We get into the Zendo at 5. We do 3 periods of meditation. Then we have a bathroom break. Then we do another period. Then we have breakfast. You know, by the time 10:30 rolls around, you're really tired. You know, tired. Many people at around 9:30, you can see them on the cushion, and they look like wilted flowers. You know, people are hunched over. They're tired. You're barely hanging on, right? And maybe the last sit, it's all you can do not to go to sleep, or maybe you actually go to sleep, you know. So you might say to yourself, you know, why do we do this? You know, couldn't it be easier? And I guess it could be a little easier, but not too much easier. It is possible we could have the session start at like 8, you know, be in the Zendo by 8, sharp, you know. We could have lunch at breakfast at 9, Zazen at 8, breakfast at 9, you know, go to bed at 9:30. I think you'd find the experience much less liberating. And I think when you looked out of your eyes at the world, it would be much less alive. I was just reading an article in Scientific American. It was from March, actually. And they were talking about how people solve problems. And it really astonished the researchers because they didn't expect this. They were interested in how people solve problems and how rested they were, basically. And they found that some people, when they get up, are not really with it. Right? You know, not really with it. They're still tired if you get people up early. Some people are very tired. They stay up late. When you wake them up early, they're tired. And they said, how do you feel? And they all said, we don't feel good at all. You know, we're very blurry. Our minds are blurry. And then they gave them problems to solve, interestingly. And there were two kinds of problems. One kind of problem was like a math type problem. And they found that the people who were tired and blurry did more poorly on the math problems than the people who got enough rest. So that's just what we would think, right? In other words, you know, there's a kind of problem you can solve in a rational step-by-step way, calculating each step of the way. And that kind of mental processing is very crisp and clear. You know, that's the kind of mental processing we do when we're balancing our checkbook, hopefully crisp and clear. When you're working out your, if you do your taxes yourself, as I did for many years, you know, I would have to try to be crisp and clear, you know. They said, but there's another kind of problem which requires that what they called an aha moment. An aha moment. That's what they said. And they said that actually the people who were well rested did much worse on those tests. Isn't that interesting? And they said the people who were tired and felt that they were not at their best did much better on the questions that required a shift in the way they thought, creativity, the aha moment. And I said, aha! This confirms what... But it is true, right? I mean, you know, sometimes people rush to judgment, you know. People might come to Sesshin and say, oh, this is all superstition, you know, let's just get up at 8, you know. But actually, if you've gone through Sesshin, you know it's liberating. That, you know, when we're coming to Sesshin, we're not coming to Sesshin to be better mathematicians. We're not. We're coming to Sesshin to change the way we experience the world, right? At the cellular level, almost, right? Fundamental mental habits keep us in a prison, and we're getting out of prison, yeah? So you know, Zazen is about those aha moments, seeing in a new way. And koan training in particular requires you to break out of your old way of thinking. You know, koan can't be solved with your old way of thinking. That's the beauty of the koan. So there's a koan that goes like this. If you have a staff, I will give you one. If you have no staff, I will take it away. So if you try to use the part of your brain that calculates, that adds and subtracts, you're not going to get far with that koan. You have to undergo a kind of reordering of your universe. It's like a there's this word, gestalt switch. It's like this is probably at one time there was a children's book called Where's Waldo, and there were pictures of like a forest or a jungle, and somewhere in the picture was Waldo's face hidden. And if you looked very intensely for Waldo, you could never find him. You had to let your mind just drift over the terrain of the picture, and all of a sudden it would pop out at you. See, it's a different kind of intelligence. Well, the same thing is true for Zazen. We're trying to undergo a gestalt switch. It's like suddenly seeing a pattern where before it looked like chaos. See? So actually, being tired helps. Being tired helps. Being a little bit fuzzy helps. So you know, Zen knows this very well. Right? This is a principle that has been recently discovered by American psychologists, but this has been known to Buddhists for about 2,000 years. And so, you know, the structure of the Sesshin is very much designed to push you out of your familiar ways of thinking. And when you're rested, when you're totally in control of yourself, almost impossible for that to happen. It's just, and the study actually said that. They said our defense mechanisms are so strong that unless we're in that state, it's very difficult for us to encounter the world in a new way. We build these structures that we maintain very carefully. And until we sort of like lose control, we're going to keep those barriers up. So, you know, the wisdom of the sesshin is that people go through this process that makes them feel sometimes like they're at the edge of their strength, right? But that's when you see, you have the gestalt switch, when you find Waldo in the woods, you know, or you begin to see the world in a different way. And if you go through that process again and again, your life becomes a bigger life. You know, the world, which was dead and lifeless, comes to life in this amazing, amazing way. So, hair's breadth of difference. So please don't be afraid to sit for a long time. Don't be afraid to be frustrated on the cushion. Don't be afraid to get up at 4:30 in the morning. And don't think you have to be, quote, at your best to do well at Zen. If you only meditate when you're feeling rested, you're not sick, you're not too busy, you will never meditate, right? I mean, I think it was Winston Churchill, he said history was made by people who weren't feeling very well at the time, right? You know, that's so true. So you know, enlightenment is achieved by people who weren't feeling at their best, right, at the moment, right? Of course, that you could go too far, right? We don't get up at, we do get some sleep, that's a sheen. You know, my feeling is that if people deprive themselves of too much sleep, they can't accomplish anything. So I think we sort of have the balance, right? We have the formula right, because people come into the Dokusan room, and when what they have to share shows that they really are going through some process of transformation. And when you come to sit on a Saturday, you're going through the same process. It's a little less ambitious, you know, but same process. Somebody I was talking to came to sesshin this last time. And I said, this is this person's first sesshin. And I said, how was your sesshin? And the person said, for 2 days, it was after the sesshin, it was wonderful, wonderful. Well, that's what happens when you clean up the screen behind your eyes. That's what happens. And it stuck for a couple days, you know, and that's worth a lot. You know. If you continue to practice Zen, you will have more and more days like that, I swear to you. You know, and you come back from sesshin and, you know, you're not the same person. And for 2 or 3 days, maybe you're in that sesshin mind. In Japanese, that's called zenboke. Zenboke, isn't that beautiful? After sesshin, lots of people noted in our Zen group in Seattle that they were in this state. It's like, oh, everything is so beautiful, everything's so alive, for a couple days. And Genki Roshi used to say, zen bokeh, and I used to think zen bokeh like a bouquet of flowers. So beautiful. I thought, oh, zen bokeh, you know. It's like getting flowers at the end of sesshin. And then Genki Roshi said, oh, zen bokeh means hangover. I said, well, that's a very bad word for it. That's not right. It's not a hangover. It's something quite the opposite. So it's a little trip to enlightened mind. Like a couple of days, that's what enlightenment feels like. So a couple of days of enlightenment is pretty good for a couple of days of sitting. So if you practice regularly, you'll have those experiences very deeply, and they change who you are. Feon asked Weishan, a hair's breadth difference is as great as the distance between heaven and earth. How do you understand? So, you know, this is Feon is asking his student, Shuishan, this question. He's saying, what makes this difference? Now, Shuishan doesn't explain it the way I did here. He simply repeats What I mean, Zhuishan doesn't say it and explain it as I have here. He doesn't give a little teisho and say, well, it's two different states of mind, blah, blah, blah. He simply repeats what Feon says. He says, a hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. So you can say, well, why doesn't he answer him? Why does he just repeat what he's saying? And then Feon says, how can you get at it this way? So basically, Feon is saying, well, do you understand me or not? And if he tried to explain himself, if Zhuishan tried to explain, he would be showing that he wasn't in that empty state of mind. See, Feon says, a hair's breadth difference makes the distance. Hair's breadth distance makes the difference. How do you understand? And Zhuishan basically says, I am going to remain in a blank screen state of mind. And nothing you say to me is going to get me out of it. I'm just going to stay there. See? So it's like a little Zen challenge, basically. He's trying to see if his student is really in that blank state of mind or not. And the student is. He says, I'm not going to take your bait. I'm not going to try to think it through. I'm going to be in a thoughtless state of experiencing the moment in all its perfection. And he says, I am just thus. In other words, when I look behind my when I look behind my eyes at the screen in my head, it's totally blank. It is just thus. And when I look out of the eyes at the world, it is just thus. Things as they are. It's very, you know, most Americans think they see things as they really are all the time. But, you know, actually it's very rare for us humans to see things in this way. Buddhism finds it very important to see things this way, but it says it's very rare. And we have a special word for it. When you have a cup of tea at the end of the evening after clearing your mind and it tastes like heavenly nectar, the word for that in Buddhism is tat atta. Tat atta. It's not such a smooth word. Tat atta means pure presence or thusness. Thusness. So when we are not obstructing our experience of the world with thoughts, we experience the world in its pure thusness. It's like heaven. It is literally heaven. Right? So tat atta. And the Buddha himself was called the Tathagata. Tathagata. And that means basically somebody who is himself 100% present. Just pure presence. Okay. Feon asked Zhuishan, a hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. How do you understand it? Zhuishan didn't take the bait. He says, a hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. Feon probes him a little more deeply. He says, how can you get it at it that way? How can you get it that way? He's trying to get him to start thinking with a discriminating mind. And Zhuishan says, I am thus, just pure. I am in pure presence. What about you? Where is your mind, Buster? Feon said, my mind is empty too. He said, a hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. So these are two deeply, these people understand illusion and they understand reality. And they are cultivating themselves to live in reality. Zhuishan thereupon bowed. So, verse. When a fly sits on the scale, on the balance of the scale, it tilts. Doesn't take much to shift you from heaven to hell. Doesn't take much. You know, a phone call, right, can take your beautiful day and turn it into hell if you don't have the proper mental training. Right? A fly sits on the balance, it tilts. The balance scale of myriad ages shows up unevenness. In other words, look, the history of humans and our own personal history is up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. You know, we're either filled with envy or rage or desire, or disappointment. We go from one of these states to the next. The scale goes up and down, right? But after all, it finally reverts. It always goes back to zero. You know, fundamentally empty. When Buddhism says fundamentally empty, it doesn't mean that nothing has value. It means that all of these, when we create all of these fantasies in the theater of our mind, fantasies of good and bad, fantasies of winning and losing, fantasies of beautiful or ugly, you know, all of these are fantasies, right? And they drive us to distraction, to despair, to elation, up, down, up, down. But it, you know, ultimately, they're all fantasies. And when the mind is absolute, when the screen in your head is absolutely clear and blank, when you return to that emptiness, then you're really seeing the value of the world as it is. It's like the balance goes back to zero. See, and that's the natural state of things. That's the real state of things. So, thank you for coming to practice today.